Hello. Thanks everybody who's joining live and to those who'll be listening in later. We're now in season two of This Space, now live streaming with video, Blackkite 740082. This is the 24th space in an ongoing series called Adopting Bitcoin, a conversation with Galloy. We hold discussions with thoughtful leaders about Bitcoin and Lightning adoption and about enabling communities and institutions to use Bitcoin as money, which is our mission at Galloy. I'm excited to talk this week about Bitcoin in Panama. It's a topic that's had ups and downs in terms of progress, and it's really exciting to see the potential and the recent discussions around the law. So I'm hoping to get a good foundation for us and think about where we go next. So we'll start with some intros. We've got Abelito and Miguel, and we'll do a brief walk through time because I think context is important. Panama has a very different sort of history and future than El Salvador. And I think setting some of the context will be great to hear about like what got us to today. Then we'll talk about the law, how did it come about, what happened with it. And we'll end thinking about, okay, where do we go from here? And so without further ado, let's hop in. Maybe some brief intros about each of you. Miguel, you want to provide an intro?
Yeah, I'll tell you guys a little bit about me. So my name is Miguel Helbron. I studied in New York. Well, I studied in New York, and then my first experience with startups was in New York. I tried to launch an email marketing company, start as a social media company, ended up being email marketing. Then I went on to work in advertising for marks like Adidas and then some other brands in Panama and Argentina. I was living in Argentina. Then I came back to Panama, did some digital consulting for an insurance company. And then I realized I wasn't a corporate guy. I didn't like to work in the corporate world. And all of a sudden, Bitcoin appeared in my life 2 years ago, and I fell in love with it. And I decided to do something about it. And I realized there was a need in Panama. You know, in Panama, people ask, how do you buy Bitcoin? And there's answers to it, but there's not a concrete answer. There's not like, all right, just go to this place and do that. No, it's always to get that money, transfer it to somebody else. And, you know, it's all sketchy, cumbersome, and kind of tedious. So I took it on my own hands to launch the first Bitcoin-only company in Panama, which is called Guat. It's not launched yet. We actually released the website for pre-registration today. Our mission is to on-ramp as many Bitcoiners as possible in the region and offer many, many, many more financial services when time comes. And obviously focus on Bitcoin adoption and get people into this new economy. We're trying to build an end-to-end Bitcoin economy. So hopefully it starts from here and then we'll see where it goes.
Awesome. Abelito.
All right. So, Abelito is my meme. So my name is Enrique. And I actually heard about Bitcoin back in 2012. And as every serious Bitcoiner you might know, actually said it was a scam. And so I just completely scrapped it as an option. And I actually looked at it for the next couple of years. I never took it seriously. And then I actually started buying my first Bitcoin back in March 2020 when the pandemic hit. And I did it also for personal reasons, because I actually got into a bit of a conundrum on the political side in Panama. So I left Panama for 7 years, and now I'm back. I've been back for 2 weeks now after 7 years. Met my son for the first time 2 weeks ago. He's about to be 3 years old. I haven't seen my wife in 3 years. So it's wow. Been a ride for me, and but that's how completely different story we can talk about that.
Another day.
Yeah, another day. But a little bit of my background: I've been in finance for more than 25 years. I went to school in London, so I have an MBA in private equity from London Business School. I did my undergrad at the University of Tennessee. And so I've been in finance for a while, I now everything that I do, everything that I can think of, my thoughts, besides my wife, my only love is Bitcoin. So I actually have lost many friends because that's all that I talk about. And maybe Miguel can relate to that.
Who hasn't? I actually sent my cousin a message yesterday saying I might need new friends. I think I'm running out.
So I actually started getting involved in the discussions of the law with Gabriel Silva and a couple of other people in a Telegram group. And then from an idea, it became a project. From a project, it became a reality. Now, I don't even know what's the status now. I mean, it was supposed to be vetoed, the project, but it's been 30 days.
It was vetoed. So the project, the third debate passed, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, it was my brother's birthday. So it was April 28th when it passed third debate. So then they had 30 days after that. And I have actual video evidence of the president speaking on why he was going to veto the law, which I'm going to be pretty blunt right now. It was just because of the simple fact that he did not read it. He listened to a couple of agenda filled advisors. I hope you're listening, Nito, who explained the law to him. I don't know how much he understood of it, but yeah, that's the only reason was they didn't read it and they thought it was gonna add to our problems with the Gafi. Is Gafi the same in English?
Probably.
Whatever. The gray list that we're in about with AML, CFT, and all these things, all that bullshit, without even knowing that the actual facts state that Bitcoin has like 0.15% illicit activities, while fiat has like 5 to 3% of them, over 800 billion. I don't even know the numbers, but it's ridiculous. So it was just because of a lack of information, fear, obviously. And I am going to take a swing right now when I say that there's a big chance that a lot of bankers high up called the president and Amaury and told him, like, you know, cut it at the root. You know, that's a guess of mine, but I don't think I'm pretty far off.
But in any case, the it's not going to be a complete veto, as I understand it. So it's going to be a couple of the articles of the law.
I know that the process is, so he vetoes the law and then it goes back to redrafting. So they got to redraft the clauses of the bill that
only,
they're not in
only the
agreement
ones,
with.
Only the ones that he vetoed. So whatever clause he mentioned, that stays the same.
Yeah. The thing is, we don't know yet what he vetoed, and they want to split it in two. They want to split it in payment systems and in crypto assets. So crypto assets attached to gold, whatever, which, you know what they mean, shit coins.
Yep.
Bitcoin, Ethereum, the other ones, and then they want to have another one for payment processors, POS, like just payment systems and how that works, which I think it's not completely idiotic, but the law, the first draft of the law that passed the three debates, spoke probably 70% about payment systems. So I really don't get the point. I think it's just stalling, getting more time, which is not bad. At the end of the day, we'll talk about that later, why it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, let me hop in and you know, I'd love us to provide a little context. I also want to provide maybe my favorite meme in the world to double stamp on Abelito, not just losing friends, but losing underwear in his fall down the rabbit hole.
I still have that underwear. Okay, so I'm not gonna show it here.
I'm gonna stop sharing. But one of the things I think Abelito, I'm not sure when I stumbled across your Twitter, but I think especially during Global Bitcoin Fest, this was I think maybe last September. This was around El Salvador law. Hopping in and hearing you participate, and then you also had, you know, hosted spaces. You had like a 4-hour space a month or two ago with Gabriel Silva, Felipe. And so, you know, I really have appreciated over time, you know, your maybe perspective on the entire maybe context of Bitcoin in El Salvador and as it relates to Panamanian, the culture, the businesses, the and stuff like that. So maybe you could give us maybe 5 or 10 minutes just to think about like, you know, Panama for somebody who's newer to, you know, the country?
Or very briefly. So the way I see it, so El Salvador and Panama are dollarized economies, right? So Panama has had, I don't know, 120 years of dollar history since 1903, 1904.
Yeah.
So Panama, the way it works is that we don't have our own currency. And so you have to have, and this is the economist in me, right? So the only way a dollarized economy can work is if you have a complete open capital account. So no prohibitions to capital flows. Otherwise, the economy collapses. So it has to be very flexible from a structural point of view. And that's why, for example, Argentina, they had a convertibility wherein you had the peg, which is the peso,
yeah,
and the dollar one, but the economy was a complete mess. It was not flexible. They had capital controls, and then eventually the economy collapsed. So Panama actually first established the dollar, and then everything else derived itself from that fact.
Can I say a little thing in between? So Panama dollarized, of course, but we were actually fucking visionary since the beginning, because our founding fathers wrote in the constitution that there is no forceful use of currency in the country. So we use dollar as legal tender just because it is the most sensible thing to do, and it was really smart for the country to do. But if I'm not mistaken, you can correct me now, Abelito. I mean, there's a lot of places in Panama that accept Bitcoin. You cannot stop them. And this is something that I've thought before, but technically you could open up a French bistro and only accept euros if you fucking want.
Yep.
And nobody can tell you anything.
Exactly.
So people started to misinterpret this law, like Forbes and all these agenda-based media saying that Panama was going to force you to do the same as El Salvador, which is completely, I mean, first off, I wouldn't mind that. And second off, it's a ridiculous assumption, because if you read the, like, if you just gaze to the constitution, you know that's not true. And also, sorry, yeah. Yeah, we cannot, you cannot, I lost my train of thought, but you just can't force anybody to use any
what currency. What you say, you have no legal tender laws in Panama.
Yeah.
So Miguel said, if you want to use euros, if you want to use pesos, whatever you want to use, as long as the counterparty accepts it, then you can have it.
Exactly.
The only thing that you cannot do with other currencies is actually pay taxes, because there is a fiscal article, code of law, that it says that you can only pay taxes with U.S. dollars.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing.
Yeah, because we are downstream. We receive all the downstream from the U.S., right? That's how we make money. We make money the same way the U.S. prints money. That's how we make money. We just create debt.
There's basically, you know, but since everyone uses dollars, then their banking system is in dollars.
Yeah.
For all practical purposes, this is a dollar-based economy. So even though you can use anything you want, it is a dollar-based economy. But the difference with El Salvador is that when it comes to the adoption of Bitcoin, is that you had Bukele, right? So you have this guy who, well, actually is very interested in how he became a Bitcoiner. I don't know if you know the story, but basically he announced he was on a run for president. And then that the opposition basically didn't want him to run for president, so they basically froze his assets in the banking system so that he couldn't spend any of the money. Did you know that?
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. So he said, like, you know, these motherfuckers, you know, they, so he basically, that's how he became a Bitcoiner. Like, never again are they going to tell me what I can or cannot do. And then he wrote a tweet, like, if he became president, he was going to implement Bitcoin as legal tender way back when he was maybe a year or 2 years before he ran for president. So
that was way before Jack Mallers and that whole.
Oh, yeah. Jack Mallers came afterwards. Bitcoin Beach came afterwards. And it was a perfect excuse, because basically you had this pilot program in El Salvador that they could, you know, basically scale. And yeah, so So, but the thing is, Bukele is a very powerful man. He's very popular. He's what, I don't know, 90% approval rating in El Salvador, Congress. So he can basically do whatever he wants in El Salvador. But
which is Panama, a dangerous thing.
Which is dangerous, which I actually don't like the way the approach. So let me backtrack. It has a pros and cons, all right? So it can go faster, right? Because he can just say, my word, the law, all right? And then, so things can get implemented very quickly. In Panama, the president doesn't even believe in Bitcoin, I think.
Right.
Yeah, most people don't understand Bitcoin, and even the people who have Bitcoin, they don't even understand the basics, right? So yeah. It's going to take, so in Panama, the way this is going to be adopted is going to be from the ground up, and it's going to be a community based adoption. And Miguel,
yeah. That is jumping off of that. First, I also want to say something. I'm going to go back to Panama real quick, but I also want to say for the people listening, the real people behind Bitcoin adoption in El Salvador, without counting Bukele, I guess now, are you guys, are adopting Bitcoin and Galoy. They build the Bitcoin Beach wallet and they started this whole movement. I know other people get the credit, and I just want people to know that that's what's up. And I find it, I know you guys don't give a shit about that, but I do think you gotta get credit where credit's due.
I'll quote Mike Peterson real quick. Same team. Everybody's pushing. We're all pushing the same boulder. So
I know. But I just love to say that out loud, because you know, you guys are so humble that someone has to be the horn blower or whatever the hell it's called.
And you have to say that. I actually didn't know that. So I mean,
Abuelita, I mean, we haven't really connected much other, you know, I've creeped on your spaces, but we haven't spent a lot of time together.
Yeah.
I'd love to connect on that as well. Actually, it's funny why I always have it right here, but like we wrote a guide with Mike and the Bitcoin Beach team about, like, you know, lessons learned in Bitcoin Beach.
Oh, okay.
And so our founder, Nicholas, went down there in 2020, rather. And built the Bitcoin Beach wallet in the community in El Sante with Chimbera and Jorge and Mike Peterson, and getting Mama Rosa accepting, right? Like, so the Bitcoin Beach wallet was really some of the technology end. I mean, a lot of this, the whole program stands on the shoulders of Mike and Jorge and Chimbera and Hope House and all the work that they've done. But yeah, we built Bitcoin Beach wallet, and now, you know, Galoid has built the open source banking infrastructure that the Bitcoin Beach wallet's built on. And now we're bringing that to communities and companies and governments. Anybody who wants to build a Bitcoin bank and launch their own Lightning wallet can do so with Galoy open source software. Wow. So thank you for the plug, Miguel. This is not our, you know.
I know. I just like to say those things because you know, I'm the same way. But hopefully one day someone will do it for me. But then I'll draw it back to Panama. You know, so. That was especially, I can actually thank my good friend Moritz from Spectre Solutions. He gave me the push I needed to switch my business into focusing on ramping Bitcoin and into Panamanians and educating Bitcoin Panamanians on Bitcoin, which I think it's the first step. What I'm doing now, it's with this company and with my network and my position in Panama, is trying to get rid of the FUD, which is a hard thing. But I've been talking to executives, bankers, CEOs of different companies, and I've been trying to explain Bitcoin to them. Most of them don't get it. They think it's a scam, or they just don't see the value of it because they don't know. They don't really know. And I don't mean any disrespect, but they don't know what value is, because their whole value system is dependent on the decree of the United States government. And when they see it crumbling, they still think that it's going to be fixed, you know? So I think the main goal here, and what we're going to try to do in July 5th on the conference here, is to educate about the other benefits of Bitcoin, because I think people get too fixated in Panama specifically, and globally as well, on the price of Bitcoin and how much money you can make off Bitcoin, but they don't see Bitcoin as the asset, as the instrument to move money and to liberate ourselves from the claws of all these correspondent banks that don't allow us to do anything that they don't want us to do, you know. And for a country like Panama, that its two main sources of income are the Panama Canal and tourism. Imagine if we can expand tourism by providing smaller merchants an ability to receive dollars. They're not going to be getting Bitcoin. They're just going to be using Bitcoin as a bridge to receive dollars by the payment infrastructure that we can build with the infrastructure that we already paid for, and we already have, for them to be able to get their money. And instead of paying Visa 3%, they pay them 1% or 5% or less than 0.5% basis points. And that's something that Bitcoiners are willing to do, but big players don't want us to provide that to them because they have some sort of tie to Visa. Like, you think Visa is going to lose much if a bank doesn't work with them anymore, or like cuts a 5% of their chunk for merchants, small merchants, to receive payments using the Bitcoin railway? So that's the type of things that I'm trying to educate people on here, because there's always this insane fixation on price. And that's part of the whole Bitcoin thing, which is game theory, which is people will think about how much money that can make them, you know, and how much money they can make of it. So they haven't really, if you still see Bitcoin as I buy at 30, price go up, I sell, then you really don't understand what you're dealing with, you know. And that is our goal here right now. It's to get people into Bitcoin, show them little by little how Bitcoin works, the Lightning Network works. Our wallet is initially custodial, but it has the sole purpose of transforming each of our users from us, our custody, into self-custody. In our roadmap is to create our own self-custody wallet. You know, we have all these plans to create, like if it was a hands-on educational program for people to learn about Bitcoin by actually fucking using Bitcoin, instead of just thinking, you know, oh, it's 30,000. Oh, it's 20,000. That means it's going to zero. Oh, it's 50,000. I say this with pride. I've bought all the tops. I've never bought a dip. I always fuck up and I buy the tops, man. I don't even sweat at night. So I think that's one of the main challenges are great. Here.
70K, that's too expensive. 30K, going to zero.
Yeah. So that's like one of the goals I have, and I'm making a hard effort to use my position to get to people of power and influence in this country that I know have good intentions, that I know have the best interests of the country in mind, to try and see Bitcoin for more than just a store of value, which is the layer one based, you know, in layer one Bitcoin, that's what it is. It's digital gold, large settlements. It's a value. It's a thing of value. But then when you start scaling, you see the other possibilities it brings. And I think people haven't really understood what that means to the economy of a country and the globe. You know, and I think Panama is the number
they
one.
They haven't even understood the base layer. So when you when you start talking about, you know, second when layer,
when I talk about payment to Lightning Network and inbound and outbound liquidity, they go nuts. They don't understand. But then when I talk about, oh, imagine opening a lot of channels and collecting routing fees over every payment, they're like, you know, fucking money. So. We're trying to find a way to educate Panamanians into understanding the actual value of the bare instrument of Bitcoin, besides the store value of it, which is the layer one. You know, and once we achieve that we will, I think Panama will become a mecca, man. Because let's be honest, I fucking love El Salvador. I love Central African Republic. You know, all the countries that have been, even though it's highly corrupt, but I understand why they're doing Bitcoin. But people will actually move to Panama. You know, we have amazing beaches. We are the safest country in Central America, probably, maybe after Costa Rica. We have great infrastructure. We have buildings we have a metropolis. If you see our skyline, you think it's Miami. So we can actually bring people to move here. Nobody, and I don't mean no disrespect, but most people are not going to move to El Salvador, man. It's a complicated place to live.
You gotta listen to Mike Peterson on Pest and Piss the other day. He can't keep people away.
Really? I understand going there to visit. I mean, getting a residency and moving here. That's what I'm talking about. And now
here you're gonna be competing. I think you'll be competing for talent.
Oh, I'm down for that. I think we have leverage over them. No joke. Abelito, what do you think about that?
I really wish that El Salvador, that both Panama and El Salvador become very successful. Because,
oh, of course.
Yeah, because those are very two different approaches. I mean, completely different, like night and day. So one is top down, and then Panama is going to be bottom up. And exactly. And Panama doesn't rely on remittances. You will hardly find or meet Panamanians living outside of Panama. I mean, Panamanians don't like to migrate, all right? So it's not like El Salvador, Honduras. I mean, you see a whole bunch of those people outside of the
Panama. I'll give you a cool stat real quick. So Guad actually started as a remittance platform. That was the first idea. So I did a lot of studying on that. Panama and Costa Rica are the only two Latin American countries that are net positives, meaning we send more than we receive.
Exactly.
Our largest corridors are Venezuela, Colombia, and Nicaragua. And we got some in Spain, stuff like that. But mostly, the only money we receive comes from the states. The rest goes out.
So my point was that the payment rail from remittances is non-existent in Panama, right?
Non-existent.
So, but one thing that I believe is in which was shocking to me, is that more than 55% of Panamanians don't have a bank account, which surprised me because I actually thought it was smaller because Panama is such a dollarized and the banking sector has been so powerful for many, many years and decades in Panama. But 55% of the Panamanians don't have a bank account. And if you don't have a bank account, you don't have access to credit. And as we know from the Cantillon effect and the way this corrupted system of fiat is based, the people who have access to credit and the people who have access to bank accounts, those are the ones who actually do well. And then everyone else is just, you know, they just get paid in debased fiat currency. And Panama has the problem that you have a dual economy. You know, you have a very modern, highly educated, with very high salaries, which is highly concentrated in Panama City. And then you have a highly protected, you know, very low salaries and very rudimentary industry in the rest of the country. So you have, even though Panama is a medium income country, and then it's not a poor country. I mean, there's wealth here.
No, per capita GDP is high.
Yeah, but the disparity is very pronounced. And and reason is that you have that portion of the population that have no opportunities, no banks, no nothing. And this is where I believe Bitcoin can bridge the gap through something like Lightning payments. And having or giving people the ability to become their own bankers. So, for example, like, you know, I think like 20% of the population is Native American in Panama. They have no access to anything. And for those, everything's a cash economy. So they have to come down from the mountain, you know, meet someone like 3 days after walking, you know, in the jungle to make, you know, in-kind payments. So imagine if with your cell phone now you can just make payments, you know, from your mountain to the mountain. And this is what Miguel is doing. I mean, this is going to be a freaking, you know, a leapfrog, you know, technology for them. And they can actually adopt Bitcoin as the payment system and just completely bypass the US dollar. So it's going to be a slow process, but I think that's...
It might be faster. It might be faster than you think, man.
In the group, man.
I'm not gonna reveal too much, but hopefully in the next year. So right now the business that I'm launching, it's only on ramping. So you buy and you save in Bitcoin, and we're gonna tell you, listen, for your security, get the coins out of here, send them to your self-custody wallet, which give you options. But I think soon enough, there's going to be clearance. And I mean, you already see what Tower Bank is doing. That's going to offer clearance to everybody up to 5,000 a month. Not a lot of people need more than that, or not a lot of people are going to even going to get close to that, but that already permits you to give or to provide this, our wallet, for example, to all these people that are not, like Abelito said, that are in rural areas that have little to no access to roads, which is something that also the government will have to help with, because that is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, challenge for Panamanians, for from the base pyramid Panamanians that live day to day, wage by wage, hour by hour. They don't have roads. They walk 4 hours to school, then they take their cash and they can get assaulted on the way there, you know, and they lose everything and then they're back and they're fucked. So that's something that needs to be fixed. Panama actually has 46% of the country's banked. And I think, I don't know the exact number, but at least 70% has internet and phones. So that blows my mind. It makes absolutely no sense. That last number, I made it up. Yeah, it's higher than 70%. I was just saying something just not to, that's just fucking wild.
Yeah, that's, you know? I mean, that. So that's the, that therein lies maybe the similarity to El Salvador, which is people that don't have bank accounts but do have mobile phones. And that is a huge opportunity for the Lightning Network, for using Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, using, you know, Lightning. And like Miguel, like you said, like people still understanding Bitcoin as an asset, not understanding the potential. You know, when you look at like the central banker, the 44 countries, central bankers and financial authorities that went to El Salvador a few weeks ago, and they went to Bitcoin Beach and tried. I mean, one of the pictures that came out with like Jorge and one of these central bankers, where the guy has like this ear to ear smile on his face. And I'm like, I know that look. That's when you get the check mark. Like, yeah, and it's faster than you could have ever imagined it, because that final payment has gone from one place to the other. And this is actually the experience of people in many that are coming into Bitcoin, not from learning about hard money, you know, money printing and all of this, like hours and hours, hundreds of hours of learning, but rather they learn about Bitcoin through receiving some sats, sending some sats, right? That is Bitcoin to, I think, a lot of these individuals in, you know, in these communities. And, you know, one of the things Nicholas and I were chatting about the other day is like, you know, medium of exchange is potentially the driver of the hyper-Bitcoinization, right? And in this case, you have wallets that could be custodial, that are simple from a UX perspective, that provide easy access to payments, that allow a merchant to accept, you know, to digital payments for the first time, to have access to an asset for the first time, and to receive money from anywhere in the world, to say, hey, I'm going to teach Spanish lessons to somebody in Berlin or something like this. And so, yeah, super bullish on like bringing two communities that have mobile phones but don't have banking accounts is like such a big opportunity for
100% people to, I think,
level up.
I think the main barrier here is it's clearance. It's the ability to turn Bitcoin into fiat, obviously, which is, it's Tower Bank just started the snowball, and I doubt it's not going to keep rolling. And I really, really, really got to give it to those guys for being pioneers and understanding what that means for the country. And bringing it back to that, to just Bitcoin law in Panama. And, you know, for me and for Guat, and I don't know how Benito feels about this, I am 100% fine swimming in gray areas right now. I'm not regulated by anybody. Superintendencia, Misi, nobody. There's no regulation over me, and I'm doing nothing illegal. I'm selling a product, literally, and I'm helping people learn about a new way, a new economy. And I think the challenge will be what you just said, Andrew. It's going to be how to teach people that it's just not about the value. Bitcoin is not, I mean, you can see it as an investment. I get that. All right. That's how you get the big whales into it. You tell them, all right, put $1 million in this. Don't look at it for 10 years and then see what happens. All right. I get that. But for the rest of the people, that's not how this works. So I try to explain sometimes. For example, my friend a couple of weeks ago, he wanted to buy tickets for like a concert or something. And I told him, you can buy them cheaper for Bitcoin. There was a Bitcoin discount. And he's like, why would I spend my Bitcoin? I'm like, you don't have to spend your Bitcoin. Just get the $700, buy Bitcoin with $700, and then just send those fucking Bitcoin to that place. Like, it's not rocket science to understand that, you know? It's just a fungible thing. And people don't get it. People think that if you buy Bitcoin, you're instantly losing like $1 million in 10 years. It's just like this insane idea that I don't know why it's, I mean, maybe I'm biased because I get it to my core, but it's sometimes frustrating to see how a simple thing like that cannot be understood. So I guess our mission, my company's mission at least, and we actually got this from a meeting with an angel investor on Thursday, It's going to be besides on-ramping and making it the easiest platform ever to use, because I believe that you make it easy, people will come. It's also going to have a strong focus on education and precise situational, like educating about specific situations. Instead of trying to give a PhD on how Bitcoin works, that's not going to work. It's trying to put, all right, look at this situation. How can Bitcoin fix this situation? Boom. Look at this situation. How can Bitcoin fix this situation? Boom. And it's that type of thing that I think that's how you get it to people's minds. That's how you got to make it easy, because at the end of the day, this is like me reading the Bitcoin law. You know, I don't understand most of the words because lawyers, they build a barrier. They build a barrier because what they do in their minds is so difficult and it took them so work, which I understand, that they don't want anybody else to get it as easy as they do. So they build a communication or a language barrier that makes it harder for other people to get into the world and understand what they're actually saying. And I think we Bitcoiners are, or at least some technical Bitcoiners and some people are still doing that. You know, they're still making it hard to understand and they're still focusing on technical aspects and how whatever SegWit, multi-sig, that's not going to go into anybody's mind. That's not going
to
work.
I think the farther you go into the rabbit hole, the harder it is to know how far you have to pull yourself back out into a normie's brain to deliver information
That's a problem. You know, it's like, you know, one thing that I had, because, you know, I hang out, maybe more hours than I should in Twitter spaces. And then, so after a while, you start thinking that everyone is, you know, it's just thinking the same way with the same speed and at the same level of, as the people that you actually interact with. And then you come out of that, a group of people, and then you're like, whoa, it's not
precisely.
Like that. And then you get frustrated. This happened to me after when I was in my MBA. I mean, I was, you know, with the smartest people around, you know, because it was a top program. And after I came out of it, I just found people to be slow, you know. They were just because I was used to, you know, people.
It's not slow in a bad way, Abelito.
No, it's not in a bad way, but it's just different. And then you have to readjust. So. And one thing before I forget, Miguel, what you said, which I agree, you said that you're okay working in a gray area, and I would say that you don't need a Bitcoin law for Bitcoin to work in Panama at all.
I mean, at all.
At all.
It's never necessary.
It's you can use, and as long as someone actually accepts Bitcoin, it's fine, but. The reason I was supporting this law is if we want to have a, you know, faster adoption, we need the on-off ramps to work properly.
That is precisely it.
When I say on-off ramps, I mean the banks. And many banks were not going to get on board with Bitcoin unless there was a law that they could actually, you know, embrace themselves and basically say, you know.
Hello?
Hello. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. You're there.
Yeah. So basically, now we have the law, and then now we can actually, you know, use the law to accept Bitcoin as custodians or whatever. And but even without the law, you saw that Tower Bank actually went ahead.
That's what I was going to tell you. Yeah. And they asked, I know them personally, and they're great people, and they're fucking trailblazers. I'm so happy that I got to run it to. This all happened, like I got the connection with Tower Bank before they announced anything, and it was a blessing. It was like the universe put it in front of me. And that was my point after. It was like, we never really needed a law.
No.
And Tower Bank is the first example of that. Their correspondent banks are in the States, or at least one of them. And they would go ahead and play ball, you know, like just do your due diligence, you know, start small.
You know something? That thing that I've been hearing about the correspondent banks in the U.S. that they're going to, you know, but I mean, I actually buy my Bitcoin from my U.S. bank account because I actually never did it from the bank because you cannot do it.
Well, that's because you're there.
Yeah,
they fuck you here. I swear.
Yeah, so you can do any problem. I mean, you can use Wells Fargo, you can use Bank of America, you can do anything, and there's not a problem whatsoever. And then same thing, you do it here, then there's a problem.
Yeah, so, the thing is, so for example, when I was meeting this guy, and let's try to bring the conversation strictly to Panama. You know, I was speaking to this person about buying Bitcoin in Panama. I was pitching him my project, and he was like, but you can already buy Bitcoin in Panama. I was like, and I told him, yeah, you can. I can. You can. If you have purchasing power, if you have a US bank account, if you're going to buy 3 Bitcoin, 4 Bitcoin, of course, you're going to find a fucking way. Like, that's not a problem. If you have money, you have a way. That's a fact of life. But for the rest of the people, it's not. They got to go peer-to-peer Binance. Those rates, those percentages fluctuate. They are fucking brutal. They depend on the market. If they see there's a surge, I mean, and it's obviously supply and demand. It's a fair market, whatever. But there's not a fixed place where you can go say, hey, I want to buy Bitcoin. What do you do? Say they ask Abelito, where to buy Bitcoin? And he can just send them the fucking link to a website, which he links. Then you scan your ID, 5 seconds, and then you're gone. You're done. That's it. And you just buy fucking Bitcoin. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to answer that question.
Yeah, it's just to make it easier, you know, so people can just play with it. Because I think once they play with it, and then let's say they buy $10 in Bitcoin, okay, you know, and then they start getting more comfy, you know, on the whole thing. But if you have to go through all these hassles, they're not gonna do it, you know. Because why would they do it? Panama is a dollarized economy. It's not like in Venezuela the purchasing power of your money gets valued by the hour in South America. Here it takes longer, but it's the same destination. In the long term, you know, the U.S. dollar just lost like 98.5% of purchasing power in the last 80 years. So yeah. In the end, you're dead with the dollar, but it's just slower, and just people don't feel the. Well, now they're feeling it, you know.
during the last couple of months.
But it's not like if you are in Argentina, which is like 80% a month or something like that, which is.
No, the thing about being a dollarized country in South America, because like Panama is South America or Central South, is that we get the downstream of the shit that it's printed in the States. You know, everyone, obviously the ones that are in front of the money printer, we all know this, every Bitcoiner knows this. They get to spend the money when it's still worth something. We don't get that. We don't get that privilege.
Let me tell you something, Miguel. So because I was in the States for the last 5 years. So they had this, this check that they were giving, you know, Trump and Biden. So I received, you know, as a Panamanian, I received $1,400, you know, from, you know, the U.S. Treasury, because I was paying my taxes in the U.S. My best friend, he had, wife and kids. So he received like $10,000. So I'm asking, do you receive any check, Miguel, in Panama from the U.S. Treasury?
I didn't get shit.
Yeah, you didn't get shit. You know why? Because you know you were not an American citizen, and then you were not. So they printed all that money, and then when that money just got recycled all the way to Panama, it was already devalued. And then people are like, why is this money is not letting me buy what I usually bought last month? Well, it's because of the money printing, and slowly people are gonna start understanding that. We just hope that people do it just before it's too late, because in the end. Everyone is going to have to buy Bitcoin, and people will buy Bitcoin at the price they deserve because of their stubbornness or because of their ignorance or whatever. But in the end, they will not be able to ignore it.
Yeah,
and I'm sure, you know, Miguel and I mean, I don't gain anything of other people buying Bitcoin, but you know, it's just something that I want to dedicate my time and life. And then now that I'm here, I'm going to start, you know, because the actual Bitcoin law. That's the easy part, you know. In El Salvador, the approval was very easy. Here, maybe a couple of months. But the education part, that's because Bitcoiners believe that, okay, once a country adopts a law, okay, now the country is Bitcoinized. No freaking way. That is going to take years.
I mean, Abelito, Panama is by definition Bitcoinized.
It
literally is by definition. That's what people don't see and don't want to see or understand is the great waters that we're in right now just provides us, and I consider myself, well, I'm not even going to say it, but people that do, that are trying to do positive with Bitcoin, it gives us more room to work and it gives us less fucking microscopes on their things. We just got, I mean, we're going to report everything we're going to report. We're going to do everything by the law.
Actually, now you say that, like, so when Panama adopted the US dollar, 1904, the US dollar was on a gold standard, right?
Yeah.
So Panama adopted the US dollar because it was hard money.
99.6% gold or some shit.
And then the dollar became a shit coin. The 1930s, right? Because they, you know, they
it became a shit coin by technically 1914, but then they say it was 1971.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was way earlier.
Like all hell broke loose. So yeah. I think Panama got it was a good deal when they did it. But 100 years later, or 100 something, yeah, it's not a good deal anymore.
But wait, Abelito, we gotta give. I mean, and I say this often because I am actually really proud of my fucking heritage. Because we gotta give it to our founding fathers. Because back in 1904, having the vision to say no forceful use of currency in a country like Panama, that was part of Spain, fucking France, Spain, Colombia, the U.S., everybody. We were just a mix of everything. To have that vision to say, all right, no forceful use of currency ever, and for that to still stand, is really powerful. And it speaks a lot about our country. I mean, we're a country built on trade, similar to the Netherlands. That's what we do, man. We fucking trade and we bring people in and we have a lot of shit to get tourists going. But after that, we don't have much more, but we have so much more, so much capacity to have much more. We have the infrastructure, we have the talent, we have the people and the talent. Obviously we have an airline that connects a hub in the country. We have all these things that make Panama probably the most attractive country in all of Latin America. We speak Spanish and English. Everyone speaks English. Even if you don't think, you go to a store and you say, hey, where's the bathroom? And even the lady that you think won't understand will tell you where the bathroom is. And we're not taking advantage of it, man. We can bring so much talent here. There's so much free. There's literally thousands of open apartments waiting to be rented, and they're in really nice spots, really nice places. We have all the restaurants. The only problem here is that now luxuries here. Panama is a place of, it's a country of luxuries. So people here love luxuries. So obviously everything that's a luxury, and by luxury, I mean anything that's not a necessity, it's highly inflated. It's almost like going out in Miami or New York. So I think by bringing...
Well, that'll come to a head with Bitcoin's low time preference in an interesting way, won't it?
100%. But that's why that is the balance we need.
Yeah.
It's bringing Bitcoin here. And
luxury
and
does not and, mean... I guess luxury does not... You know, luxury...
No, I don't mean... I don't mean...
Can also, yeah.
I don't mean rings and bling bling. I mean going to dinner... And going to the movies,
basically, quality of life.
Quality of life is getting expensive. Panama is a consumer's country. Panama has a real high time preference, and I say that with confidence.
Yeah,
I was part of it. You know, I was a consumer, and I mean, I still like my hoodies and my shit. You know, but
I think
I need a Guat hoodie. Give me the finest Guat hoodie, please.
I'll get one. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, from a philosophical point of view, I think not only Panama, but small countries in general, because I really believe the thesis of the sovereign individual, the book, you know, that every Bitcoiner has almost like a Bible. And if people who are listening haven't read the book, I highly encourage people to read it, because the way the next years are going to how things are going to happen is that countries like Panama, countries like that have a territorial tax based system that has a comparatively small debt. People complain here about the debt, but Panama has like maybe 65% debt to GDP when compared to the US, it's 130%. And so Panama has been a fairly responsible in a way when it comes to public finances, except for the Social Security, which is a mess. And we're going to start attracting people, you know, high income individuals into an economy that's going to be completely digitized with Bitcoin. And you're going to see all these big countries like the US and Europe, which are already doing that, they're pressuring Panama to actually change its tax system, because they need those Europeans and Americans to remain there so they can fund the horrible welfare system that they have. But, you know, Panama can offer them, you know, a place so that they can protect their wealth, and they have done so for many, many years before, with the US dollar and the banking system and the Sociedades Anónimas, which is the legal structures. But yeah, now they can
do it with companies.
Yeah, so, so I think it's a great opportunity for Panama to actually exploit the sovereign individual thesis that may actually unfold in the next 23 years. And that's how I see Panama to actually actually taking advantage of all these opportunities. And I think people like Miguel, which I actually congratulate for his vision.
Thank you.
This and was and everything. Those are the people who are going to be the winners. And then you're going to have all these foreigners. I mean, the way the banking sector actually was born in Panama, there was no banking sector in the 60s. And basically, some people with visions are like, you know, we're going to establish a banking sector and we're going to be the banking system for all of Latin America. Oh, we don't have bankers. So what did they did? What they did, they brought U.S. bankers, foreign bankers with the expertise. They came to Panama. They established the banks. They taught the Panamanians. And then the second and third generation of bankers, they became very successful and very knowledgeable. And then that's how a new industry was born in Panama from the 1970s. So the same thing can happen here. I mean, it's just a different generation of people in a different sector. And then I believe very strongly that that sector is going to be Bitcoin. So I cannot be more bullish on Bitcoin than I am. That's how I see, and that's why for me, like, the Bitcoin law is like a marketing thing, like for people to say, oh, there's Panama with Bitcoin, but we don't need a law.
No.
Before the law, Bitcoin had 0% capital gains rate. So you could actually transact with Bitcoin. There was no taxes, there was nothing. And that's not going to change with or without the law. With the law,
yeah,
the only thing that's going to happen is that you're going to have on-off ramps with the banks. It's going to make it easier for the locals to actually buy their first Bitcoin and then get into this journey that, you know, we all are right now.
So I want to touch more on a little bit of, first I want to say my thoughts on what I think was one of the problems with the law and then what's next. So I think the law was rushed. I mean, I applaud Diputado Gabriel Silva on his initiative. However, I think when it started, it was a source of leverage for the Bitcoin community. It was, all right, I'm seeing this, I can use Bitcoin to leverage my own position and study about it and bring this law. I think the law should have taken way longer to be created. I don't think anybody that's on the government that was, and I mean no disrespect to anybody, but I mean that people in the government that wrote that law from the government weren't educated nearly enough. And I think people like me, like Abelito, and people on that Telegram group, or me who are directly speaking to the lawyer, were the ones who actually brought know-how to build that law. So that's the main problem. How the hell are we going to bring a law to a country when the assembly and the president and the people working to approve this law have no fucking idea what they are even reading or what they're treating with? So that's a problem. It's a clear problem. So now I think the fact that we have this cushion of going back, rereading the bill, knowing all the attention this brought to Panama, should light a fire in their ass for them to actually learn and draft the right fucking bill. Gabriel Silva had an amazing vision. What he's doing for the country, what he's going to do for the country, it's fucking awesome. And in my opinion, the best one of them all, at least of the independents, he's the best one. He's the one who's actually seen, he has a vision for us as a country to get out of the grips of, you guys know what grips we're on. I'm not going to shoot myself in the leg by attacking.
I actually wrote Gabriel yesterday. I was very pissed because he's not running for re-election. And do you know that? I mean, he's not.
Yeah, I think he probably has bigger plans.
Yeah, hopefully. But I think he's the best congressman in Panama. And it's hopefully he'll do something else. But yeah, I agree with you. But is with law or no law, the actual challenge in Panama and everywhere else is actually education.
That's what's next. That's what literally I have a thing here. I have like a little agenda, and what's next? It's literally, it says, for example, we had pushing the law, but next is not pushing the law. Let them take all the time they want. So once the law starts coming into first debate, second debate, third debate again, there's companies like mine, hopefully other companies born in Panama that are going to be sitting at the round table when the time comes and can help shape the future of this new economy in the country, you know, and people that actually spend their mornings and nights learning about this and are passionate about this and are, I don't want to sound cliche, but are dying on this hill, you know, because we do see the future that this might bring to our country. And I really hope that all politicians that are interested in this actually do the work and not just leverage the publicity that comes along with saying I'm pro Bitcoin, which is something that I find really hypocritical and it pisses me off.
So now that I have the privilege of being with such, you know, technical geniuses, you know, which I am not, you know, I'm just a finance guy, you know, I'm like the ex-enemy, all right? So I'm gonna go next week to Chiriquí, which is a province, you know, the border of Costa Rica.
Really beautiful. And,
So there's this Bitcoiner over there, because I actually got in touch with Bitcoin Beach a couple of maybe like a month or two ago. And they wanted to see any place in Panama that could have a similar community, just like, you know, El Sonte. And this guy is actually trying to work with the Native Americans in Panama. I mean, I think it's a Nove Buble, and to actually help them adopt a Lightning payment networks within the community and having a close economy of Bitcoin only transactions. So, I mean,
I'm down to help for that.
Yeah, so I was going to tell you, Miguel, I'm going to go there. I'm going to talk to them. And I don't know, Andrew, you know, if you want to get involved. I know that the Bitcoin Beach people, they wanted me to because I told them that I was going to come here and I was going to go there and then see how they're doing that, because it will be very interesting to see if we can develop, you know, a close-knit community of Lightning payments. I don't care if they use the Bitcoin just to get dollars on the other side, but just using the rails, they will actually, that's how adoption
precisely happens. Yeah, we gotta I mean, and maybe we can work on this together, Abelito, because like I said, probably like half an hour before ago, it's about more than price, you know, and once we teach, if we can get a small community to rip the benefits of Bitcoin, the network, instead of Bitcoin, the store value, or Bitcoin, the it's not a security, obviously, Bitcoin, the currency. Once we can use the railways that destroy these closed garden walls of Visa, MasterCard, Cash App, Venmo, even Yapi, which is one of the transaction things here in Panama, which is revolutionary, and I use it and I love it. I love Banco General. They do great stuff. They're a little afraid of Bitcoin. I'll try to help them change, hopefully. But once they see the value of charging a fucking merchant 0.5% per transaction instead of 2.5 or 3.5% per transaction and get instant settlement in fiat, and they see how a community prospers. And we start with a 200, 500, 1,000, 2,000 people community. And once they see that and they see the faces of these people starting to get to, because you learn about finance, man. You learn how to control money. You know, you learn about saving. You learn about why you don't need to spend your money now and you need to spend it in X amount of time, why this matters. That's the whole point of this. It's teaching people finance in a proactive, hands-on way. And that hasn't been done before. I remember when I tried to launch my first startup with my two friends in New York, Jared and Scott. Scott would always say, we need to have one. His idea of a startup was actually to create this new curriculum of how to deal with taxes and 401k and how to like help people manage their finances from early on. We don't do that because the system wants you to be uneducated, and more in our countries, man, the more uneducated our people are, the easier it is for them to get votes. They give them a pound of rice and a dollar bill, and that's a vote for them. And that's not a lie. That actually happens in all these comarcas in Nueva Bugle and all these places. They go, they talk to the cacique, they give them a big bag of cash, and then the whole town votes for them. And it's fucking tragic, and it's the truth. It's a factual truth. I'm not making this up. So if we can start, hopefully Guad right now, it's mostly aimed for people with bank accounts for the obvious reasons. We cannot just have, it's too hard to have cash management in the beginning. I'm not going to start having armed police or ATMs with self-appointed turrets if you try to steal them. You know, I can't do that right now, but hopefully at some point I'm going to have cash in so everyone can get into Bitcoin regardless of their banking situation, or they'll just be unbanked and be banked by Bitcoin, which is fucking awesome. So hopefully we can get those APIs. Hopefully Strike's API from USD, BTC, USD gets adopted by us here, or we build our own, who knows. But yeah, Belito is on the right track, and I will help on everything I can. I was actually speaking with Nicholas. It was a really brief talk, but I was thinking of making, this might be really fucking dangerous, but I was thinking of trying to create a Bitcoin economy in Colón, which, yeah, I see your face, but.
Well, like, this is how the Bitcoin Beach wallet was born, was being tested live within a community for send and receive. And, you know, what does somebody who is a merchant need versus what does somebody who is buying something need, you know, buying pupusas and stuff like that. And so we should start a WhatsApp group or something like that and kick around ideas, and happy to help, yeah. Happy to send. I just sent a stack of these, you know, it's this, like 5,000 word article about, like, you know, again, lessons learned building Bitcoin Beach wallet. Andrew, I sent a stack to St. Petersburg. I can send them your ways as well.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Remember, you got to send me those monthly so I can translate them to Spanish.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'll post that in my site.
Yeah, so I'll be there next week, and I'll see. There's this American Bitcoiner. He owns a hotel in Boquete. So he's been talking to the Rotary Club. And so basically this NGO is actually working with these people, and they have no access whatsoever to bank accounts, like zero, okay? So this would be, space technology for them, you know, if we can actually implement something like that. And that would be helping the poorest of the absolute poorest in town. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, I actually like to get involved in that project. I'll let you guys know. But yeah, in general, I think Panama has, you know, a great potential. The law is irrelevant. You know, it's just
completely irrelevant.
Adopted faster. The only thing that matters is zero capital gains taxes. That's it.
And as we all know, even if they implemented voting accident, what was I gonna say though? For what's next in Panama, like Abelito say, we don't really need a law. It's gonna happen at some point, because it's gonna happen everywhere. What this we actually need
for Panama,
what we need is we need accounting. We need the accounting of Bitcoin to be regulated, and that's a fact. And I know everyone knows that. Michael Saylor says it every day. That's something we do need in the future, and I hope they do actually add that in the law. You know, if it goes up, can you declare your value as it going up, or only if it goes down, which is how it is right now? You know, those things that are really unfair to Bitcoin. My one worry with communities in Panama and accelerating this movement too far is we do need the fiat conversion. We do need the clearance, because volatility is going to be present. We're in price discovery stage. We're seeing something that is actually, in my opinion, magical. It's something that not a lot of people get to see, a currency gain value in front of our eyes. price discovery, see how far it will go, where it will stay, where it's going to start to flatline. I think it's going to be in a couple of years, probably 20, 30, 40, who knows. Hopefully I'm alive to see that. But if we don't do, if we rush this, and this is just my personal opinion, at least in Panama and from what I've seen in El Salvador, you know, in El Salvador, people downloaded Chivo wallet, got the $30 and bounced. You know, we don't want that to happen here. We're not going to give nobody free money. The idea will be get them some sort of clearance. If it's, you know, if it's a small merchants, a small chinito, we call them abarroterías, corner shops, like bodegas in Panama, you know, they get a 2,500 limits. So 2,500 limits of Bitcoin purchases that they get into fiat. And that can be, I can provide that. I'm being, all right, they pay you in Bitcoin, you give me the Bitcoin, I give you the fiat. You know, we can do something like that. That can be created. But unless we have a way for the people with lower means, the base of the pyramid, for lack of a better word, for them to get into fiat, I think the volatility of Bitcoin, it's enough of a factor to scare them off because of the lack of education. And I see it, I think it's pretty, we're far, not far, far, but we're still far from having some sort of digital currency education in our curriculum. So volatility is a really, really scary factor for people who don't understand what this is. And they don't see it in 4 year, 5 year periods like you and I do, and you too, Andrew, and everyone else is probably listening right now. Hopefully some people that don't know a lot are listening. So we got to fix that first.
In El Zante, they actually, it's funny, they didn't have a traditional ATM, but they got a Bitcoin ATM. And this is something that made people connect the idea of like, oh, Bitcoin is money there. It's on the phone. I have it here in my Lightning wallet, but I can actually exchange it for dollars, right? And that made like the mental connection of dollars. The other thing I'll say is the USD account being developed and tested in Galway wallets, enabling people to save in dollars to avoid the volatility without having to transfer money out. And so, this is something that we're actively testing now, which is kind of is game changer, right? Because you don't actually have to get money, get sats out of your wallet to try and avoid volatility. You can actually just two clicks, send money into your USD account and sidestep that. So if you put $1 aside, that dollar stays a dollar, whether Bitcoin goes up or down, and you know that you can pay your bills, pay your suppliers, pay whoever you need to pay. So
I already knew this, but listening to it again is music to my ears, because I'm going to reveal something. That's obviously part of our roadmap, is giving our users the ability to choose what they want to have in Bitcoin and what they want to have in a stable coin or US dollars. The thing is, I'm not really sure still. I want to give it a little bit more time until I choose what stablecoin is worth using. Everything going on right now is it's scary, man. What's happened to Luna and Terra and USD and now Celsius and all these things, you know, it's a risky business to go into it right now, especially with the impending doom of the economy that's in the future.
We need more pain. I actually hope Bitcoin goes down and then completely destroys the rest of the shitcoin circus.
That's happening. I mean, if you're betting, that's why I didn't put a single dollar in Coinbase when the stock went down. I don't invest in anything else that's not Bitcoin or Bitcoin only, because if you're betting your business model in this new era of digital currencies or digital economy, if you're betting it on anything but Bitcoin, you're destined to fail.
Yeah,
I mean,
I just showed is no stablecoin. That's sats.
That's sats.
Using derivatives contracts.
Our ambition is for you to be able to deposit $1,000 into Guat, and then you buy $1,000 worth of Bitcoin. But then you're like, you know what? I want to keep $500 in US dollars. So you just switch it back. You give us a Bitcoin, and then we just accredit you $500, and it's all gonna be in a ledger. So it's all, the law is being fulfilled. Nobody's going to be able to transact dollars between wallets, because that would make us a bank, and we're not a bank yet. But yeah, man, that's key.
Yeah. I think another thing that Miguel mentioned is that El Salvador made it like a state project, Bitcoin to be a state project. So everyone would receive $30 in Bitcoin in their wallet. So it was a government wallet. I mean, Panama has nothing of that sort. I mean, it's going to be all free market. And actually, you know, you can actually do the same thing with any shitcoin. So it's going to be a complete open market, you know, a complete savage, you know, destruction
of survival of the fittest. So it's survival of the fittest.
Yeah, survival of the fittest. And then people are free to choose, you know, their own, you know, knife to cut their throat with the shitcoins. And
they're the best service win.
They're going to have their, you know, themselves to blame, either because of ignorance or because of stupidity or because of, you know, greed. But they'll have the option. I don't believe in actually telling people, no, you cannot do this because, you know, you're a little kid. And then I have to tell you because I'm, let them do whatever they want.
Can I say something?
And if you need pain, if you need the pain, actually, because this is how I learned about Bitcoin. I learned with pain, you know, and pain is the best teacher that you can have. And once you learn with pain, you'll never forget that freaking lesson. So
yeah,
that's it. It should be.
But there's, I have a counter argument to that. So I got lucky enough that I only purchased one shitcoin, which is Stacks, which is technically working on Bitcoin. I already sold it to Bitcoin to turn it to Bitcoin, but I had the privilege that I fell in love with Bitcoin the day I learned about it. It just clicked. It was like an aha moment. So that gave me a chance to just focus on that since day one, which is a blessing for me. And I understand the whole theory of people learn through pain and hitting a wall and losing all their money in a shitcoin and that greedy mentality of I'm going to be the next guy who invests in a coin that's worth 0.000003 and then it goes to 0.003 and then I make $1 million, but that's bullshit. That's not going to happen. We already know, buy the rumors, sell the news. Everyone is buying the news. But
Miguel,
you're like the
0.000%. I mean,
no, I know.
Let me finish.
My point. The thing is, I'm a forever optimist, and I even have that in my fucking email signature. So I believe this is all gonna work out. I believe everything that is happening right now is for a reason. It's to wake people up. They gotta see the crashes. They gotta see the capitulations. They gotta see everything go down so they can switch their weak hands into Bitcoin. However, I do have a special problem with people taking advantage of people that are not educated. And that is what's going to happen if we allow all these other shitcoins to enter this market with promises of gains that are not going to be completed. Because you already know, I mean, you can go back to what happened here when Eric Voorhees and that guy Isra or whatever, Esra, came here and they did the Gould coin. I recently learned this story, actually. And they were claiming they had this coin that was going to make everybody a lot of money. People were investing hundreds of thousands of dollars and they had a blockchain or whatever. And then actually a friend of mine, I'm not going to say his name, he's a really smart guy. He got wary about it. He was like, what the fuck is this? And he stress tested the coin and it ended up being, there was no blockchain. All the coins were in one laptop. So it was a big, massive scam. Probably you guys know about this. Nicholas probably knows about this. A lot of people know about this. And things like that, opening up the gate, the Pandora's box, to call it, for all these other projects in Panama, even if most are Cardano, Algorand, Solana, and all these that have a little bit more of a track record, Lindsay effect, however you want to call it, it's also going to open up the door for smart coders to start building their own coins and promise and go to Colón, go to Cocle, go to Veraguas and be like, yo, buy this shit. And yeah, you'll be rich.
You cannot avoid that because Panama, I don't think you can even prohibit that because it's completely
open. I know you can't, but.
You got to wake up earlier, Miguel. One hour earlier than 4 a.m.
It's between three and four.
You've got the banks on the right. You've got the shitcoiners on the left. And everybody's racing for the finish line. And we got to go.
Well, that's going to be one of my goals. It's when those shitcoins starts to appear, I'm going to put Bitcoin in their faces. And that's something that I feel like all of us should do, especially in Central America, Latin America, Africa, Southeast Asia, all these countries that are being exploited by corruption and rug pull schemes, because there's no other way to call it. And Panama is primed for that. So that's something that worries me, because the moment that starts to happen, then people lose faith in Bitcoin, because they instantly attach Bitcoin to the rest of the shit. So that's a problem. And trying to separate Bitcoin from the rest is something that I really, really look forward to. And I know it's going to happen soon. Bitcoin's going to start moving by its own rhythm. It's not going to be correlated to markets. It's not going to be correlated to Ethereum. It's not going to be correlated to anything else. But before that happens, we got to make sure that people understand the difference between Bitcoin and the rest. You know, they see proof of work and all they think is this energy FUD. Energy FUD is the moment somebody mentions energy to me now, I just sigh. I go, and then I completely dismiss them. And that in that dismissal enters game theory, which makes them so angry at me that they got to go Google why their point is valid. And while they Google it, they learn their point is invalid. And then they're like, ah, now I see it, you know? So it's that type of education that's needed here. It's protecting the uneducated, because nobody, you know, I know this because I'm passionate about this. You know, I can tell all my friends that I've convinced to buy Bitcoin, they buy it because I talk about it all day. I sell it with really good points. I tell them the real value about it, the incentive to turn to renewables, the payment network, the store value, the increasing price, the scarcity of it, the portability of it, all the fact that money is a tool, all these things. But not everyone has the capacity to understand this, because our educational system is fucked. Like, it's being rebuilt right now, and the budget they gave, I know this because I know people really close to me that are working in this. They got $150 million to try and fix the education for primary schools in the country. How the fuck do you plan to like, you invest $1 billion in other bullshit and you think $150 million is enough to fix education in a country? It's not even close. So I think that the race or the battle starts there. And the only way to do it is by having more Bitcoin-oriented companies in Panama. You don't have to be my competitor. Go ahead if you want to. But you can do other stuff. You know, you can focus on education, build books, work with me, you know, do whatever the hell is necessary. But if we don't educate in a really simple manner, if we got to stray away from our egos, stray away from thinking that we know more than the rest, you know, and try and simplify these things for the regular people who don't really have an interest in Bitcoin to understand why they should have an interest in Bitcoin. And I think if there's a country in Central America or in Latin America in actual truth, it's Panama. We are a blessed country. We are geographically blessed. We have the canal, and we have a saying, de Panama para el mundo, from Panama to the world. You know, there's a reason why we are the way we are. And there's a reason why we will be an elemental part in the adoption of Bitcoin in Latin America. And I don't have a doubt in my mind.
I wish you were right about the shitcoins, but I think there's more shitcoiners than Bitcoiners in Panama. As it is,
but all shitcoiners.
Wait. As it is everywhere, but I do agree that if you actually compare last cycle to this cycle, there were like 3,000 shitcoins. I think back in the 2017.
Yeah, and now it's 10,000 plus.
The Bitcoin dominance went much lower. And this time there were like, what, 15,000 or maybe 20,000? And then actually the Bitcoin dominance actually went down at a higher price than during the last cycle. So it means that comparatively speaking, even though there's many, many more shitcoins, the relative value of Bitcoin is much larger this cycle than the previous cycle, which it goes to Miguel's point that at some point Bitcoin is about to reach escape velocity with all these freaking cheat points. But I don't think my experience with people is that they, with everything, we live in an era of people, 150 characters on Twitter, they read only the summaries. I mean, they don't, oh, Bitcoin, what is this? Oh, okay, maybe Cardano. They think it's the same shit, you know? And to actually understand, and that's why I'm not so hard on people who dismiss Bitcoin, because it takes thousands of hours of actually understanding. And Miguel was fortunate or smart enough to actually, you know, get Bitcoin right away. But I know really smart people that that I really respect, and they don't get it. And it's like my one of my best friends and my business partner, I've been talking to this guy for like 2 years about Bitcoin. I mean, constantly. And like a month ago, he's like, oh, I finally got it, you know. And this is a really smart guy. It took me 7 years to actually understand Bitcoin, you know, for what I think is valuable for. I mean, I never thought Bitcoin was an investment. For me, it's more of a savings technology.
And if I
it's an insurance. So I don't even care. I don't care if it actually goes from 30,000 to 20,000 or if it goes from 30,000 to a million. For me, the main reason is insurance. It's actually making me a sovereign individual. People cannot take it away from me, which is, you know, what you really, I mean, when you're in a crisis and when you're being persecuted, you don't care about the capital, you know, you don't care about the gains, you just care about protecting, you know, your wealth and, you know, what much or little you have. So it's not that easy to conceptually understand Bitcoin because you have to look at it from very different angles. But once you do it, it just clicks, you know, and it may take a year, it may take a few seconds like Miguel, it may take 7 years like myself. Even Michael Saylor, I mean, he actually, in 2013, he wrote that, you know, Bitcoin is going to have the same fate as an online casino. So he didn't get it. I mean, some of the smartest people who are the biggest defenders of Bitcoin, that they completely dismiss it right away. So even though it's a, you know, simple, elegant technology from a technical point of view, I mean, the implications, when you look at it from, you know, from
macro perspective,
macro, from a violence perspective, from a sovereign, you know,
from an energy perspective,
from energy, from it's so counterintuitive. It's simple once you get it, but it's so counterintuitive that people just don't get it.
And if I can just protect myself from what I just said earlier, I don't believe Bitcoins will disappear. I don't think that they will keep coming because we are humans, we are greedy, and we all want to be millionaires in a second. Nobody wants to do the fucking work. So that's always going to be there. What I mean is a lot of people don't have, you know, they don't even want to be millionaires or they want to make more money. And that education, that lack of education on this coin can make you rich, which is literally all it takes to get a bunch of people into a coin. It's a risk. You know, if my friends buy a shit coin, I don't give a crap. That's their fault. But if somebody goes and promotes a shit coin in a community in Panama that's completely uneducated to get $10 out of each, $10 for 1,000 people, that's $10,000. So if you get 10,000 people, that's 100, you know what I mean?
I agree.
You can get literally a crowdfunding of uneducated people to make money. And that's why the education of Bitcoin has to be strong and separated from the rest of the altcoins. And I'm going to stop calling shitcoins. They're fucking altcoins, man. They're people who are trying to, some have a purpose. I don't think most are going to pass the Howey test. They're all going to fucking, or they will pass the Howey test or whatever it is, one or the other one. There'll be securities. They're going to have to disclose what they do. They don't do shit. And then they're going to be wiped out. And then the hands are going to flow into Bitcoin. So my point was more about protecting our fellow Panamanians and our fellow humans from these scams, which are always going to be present. But I think the answer is always going to be Bitcoin. And another point is most shitcoiners own Bitcoin. Bitcoiners don't own shitcoins. And that is something that people don't really assimilate, but it's so important.
I'm going to tell you something. People are going to be scamming other people with Bitcoin as well.
Because, oh, probably. I mean, it's impossible malevolent actors are always going to exist, but Bitcoin filters them. You cannot be a malevolent actor in the
blockchain. Unless you actually have your Bitcoin in your hard wallet, there's going to be people doing Ponzi schemes. Like, oh, give me that money and I'm going to buy the Bitcoin. I'm going to keep it for you.
Fractional reserve Bitcoining.
Yeah. I heard a lot of cases in Colombia. You know, I have a good friend.
That's funny.
Actually got scammed Bitcoin. So it's education. And I'm here for that. You know, I'm not a coder. I'm not a programmer, you know, but everyone has its parts. You know, from my perspective, you know, from my experience, you know, from the perspective of what I actually went through, which is a complete, you know, interesting story on its own. I think, and then there's people like Miguel, and there's other people that they bring different perspective into Bitcoin because it has so many different. I mean, Bitcoin has some perspective that I probably haven't even think of or thought of yet. But so like this guy, like Jason Lowery, I think, you know, Bitcoin as, you know, a solution to war and violence and there's this other guy that I heard about yesterday, like, you know, that Bitcoin is a triple accounting ledger entry, you know,
triple entry accounting.
Yeah, triple entry account. So it's completely different.
Double entry account
is
the entire financial system.
Entry account, and then it takes out the middleman from accounting, and it's just going to revolutionize the whole accounting industry by itself. Yeah. It has so many things that we haven't probably even thought of that are so interesting. And
I'm gonna
get involved in this industry as much as I can.
Yeah. So I think we're close to closing remarks. So I'm gonna say something that it might be controversial and I might be chased on a pitchfork by some Bitcoiners, but I do believe that the future of Bitcoin depends a lot on us being open to play ball with the legacy system. You know, the Trojan horse theory. If we don't Trojan horse their ass, we're gonna get fucking stomped on. And at the end of the day, you find people like Tower Bank who are super open to Bitcoin, and you don't even need to Trojan horse them. They are open, and banks are going to be open, and the legacy system, some of them are going to adapt, and the ones that don't. And if you don't adapt, you lose, man. It's inevitable. Like fucking Thanos says, you cannot stop this. It's already started. It already gained too much traction. Bitcoin's here to stay. Now it's a matter of us not being stubborn. Stop speaking like it's either Bitcoin or we die. Even if it is, we gotta fucking play ball, man. If we don't play ball, we're gonna get hate, we're gonna get resentment. And we keep talking about game theoretics, and there's a really good article I can send you about it. If you know the story of General Cortez, how he burned the boats before attacking the Mayans, that is for me the best example of game theory in the history of the world. His soldiers wanted to leave the battle, so he burnt the boat, so they had to fight an uphill battle, and they won. You know, we got to burn all the fucking shit that we believe in that's only Bitcoin, 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 and just understand that Bitcoin is the answer, but there's a path to getting there, and the path is playing fucking ball, man. Play ball, be smart, don't compromise your model, your morals. Do what's right. Do what you know it's right. I don't think there's right or wrong. It's positive, negative. You do whatever the fuck you think it's right. You know, it's everything just is. Bitcoin is a tool. Barter didn't work. Then we make salt. Salt was debased. Shells were debased. Glass beads were debased. Yap Island stones was fucked by the General O'Keefe. You know, we got the whole history of money, and it always ends with debasement. Bitcoin cannot be debased, but we got to get there somehow. And the only way to get there is by playing ball. If we start being an enemy to everyone, we're outnumbered right now, man. You know, and we need to bring more people on our side, even if they're bankers, even if they're fucking credit creators, non-productive assholes. You know, if you How the Economic Machine by Ray Dalio, if you see that, it's just the world just been breeding people that get loans to buy a 15 screen instead of starting a business. You know, all that shit. We need those idiots, sorry if I'm offending anybody, on our side. So it's playing ball with the system, but smart. That's my opinion. Please don't kill me, but that's how I'm going to play it.
Yeah, I think Bitcoin doesn't need anybody, but I see your point. I actually think it depends on...
No, it doesn't need anybody to succeed. It doesn't need anybody to succeed or grow, but if you want to see it in your lifetime, it might need a help, a little help from some people.
Yeah, I think it, for example, in the US and Europe, it's going to be a sore battle for many, many years. But for emerging markets, people that have no bank accounts.
But maybe not, man.
That's going to be, I think it's going to be a medium of exchange right away.
And, but Abelito,
yeah.
What happens when so Stripe's building this API, they say it's global. It's not global yet. It's going to be global at some point. They keep saying it's global. It's not global. What if we build the API of USD, BTC, USD, and I go to Grupo Éxito, for example, or some big ass retailing group in Colombia or in Brazil, and I tell them, listen, we're issuing cards that are BTC backed or credit backed, fiat backed, but we use Bitcoin railways. What would stop a big commerce from saying, now every time somebody pays, you only lose 0.5% instead of 3%? Amazon stopped accepting Visa in the UK because the MDR was like 3.6%, which is fucking ridiculous. So that's what I mean by presenting the legacy system, the actual benefits of Bitcoin besides its value. If we keep focusing on price dynamics and it went up, it went down, you bought at 60, now it's 30, you're under, fuck you. You know, like that's just fugazi, it's noise. Like if we scratch out the noise, there's real value besides the store of value. For me, layer one, store of value, large settlements. If you want to move a $10 billion from the States to fucking Austria, you do it through Bitcoin. But for the rest, we're going to have other layers. And the may the best service wins. The may the best service win. That's how I see it. Those are my closing remarks.
Yeah, I actually think that the fiat system is going to survive. I think every currency is going to collapse. Only the dollar is going to be the last one standing, but it's going to die.
Hopefully.
But in the end, you're going to need fiat to make, because if you have two store values and you can actually use any of those to make payments. Of course, you know, you're going to use the one that you're going to find less valuable to make payments, and then keep the other one that you find more valuable, you know, from as a store of value. So I think people are going to, you know, hoard their Bitcoin, and then they're going to do their day-to-day purchases with whatever they can exchange their Bitcoin for, which is dollars or pesos or whatever. And yeah, there could be a path of adoption for merchants. If you can actually convince them, that's an easy one to convince, you know, to actually pay 0.5%, you know, fees instead of a 3 or something like that.
That's a fact. It's not a fugazi dream.
I know, but how fast or how slow that is is open
three,
to
two years tops, man. In you all think honesty, three years? Two years tops, and that's what's next for Panama. I'm not gonna reveal too much, but we start with small commerces, man. We start with Lochinitos, we start with Abarroterias, small stores, and we tell them, hey, listen, Guad just issued a card. Let us install you a POS service here. It's not gonna cost you anything. We'll put it here. All you have to do is scan this. You'll get your money in fiat. The transaction is gonna be done in Bitcoin, and you're not gonna lose 3% in Panama. Now it's not that much, but before, and it happens in most of Latin America and underdeveloped countries, they don't allow you to pay with credit card unless you spend more than $5.
Yeah, I know.
You know that.
Yeah, I know.
So that is a problem that Bitcoin fixed directly. And I mean, I'm not in Bitcoin obviously I want to make money. I don't have a rush to make money. It can be in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. I honestly don't give a flying fuck. So if we can start small and get people adopting Bitcoin small, I think that's where the real change starts. And I think that's what's next for Panama, Andrew, and the rest of the people watching.
We're going to need to clone you and then have a lot of efforts like that. And I really hope that you can do it. I mean, I know that you're going to do it because the value proposition is very clear. It's just, for me, just when. It's not if, it's when.
It's when.
2 years, I think it's going to be 5 years. For me, it also depends on how bad this inflation thing actually is. It's going to be, the adoption of Bitcoin is going to be directly proportional to the debasement of the US dollar.
Yeah, and also remember, it's not either or. This shit's exactly. Not binary.
Yeah,
it's not either or. I agree. You got both.
I agree with you. And actually, you've seen an appreciation of the U.S. dollar.
Yeah.
Which might be the final.
They made up this new thing. This new thing called QT instead of QE, which it's fucking insane because it actually causes more inflation. I don't know how they don't see it. It's ridiculous, honestly. The financial system, it's a fucking mess.
I think for Panama makes all the sense in the world to actually adopt Bitcoin. Panama went, just as a closing remark, into the US dollar when the dollar was at parity with gold. So it was a gold-based currency. And it was real value. Now the dollar is a shitcoin. I mean, Panama likes hard currencies. So
we have the
hard currency, you know? It's only 21 million Bitcoins. And I actually think, now that we're, you know, like Social Security, which is a complete mess, is like $16 billion in unfunded liabilities. They should actually put some of those reserves in Bitcoin, man. What the Panama Canal should start accepting Bitcoin as payments as well.
So, if we had... If we had Bitcoin in our balance sheets, that fucking thing Martinelli built, that stupid dollar that's worthless in the rest of the world, could actually be worth
actually,
something. Could be created against the Bitcoin.
This is one thing that we have a common friend, Aldo, and he basically, because I was like, you know, that Balboa, the Balboa, we should actually have a Balboa or a Martinelli, whatever you want to call it, be backed by Bitcoin. But, you know, I'm... something that, you know, there's real value behind the actual, like, so that Balboa could be a stable coin, and that stable coin could be, you know, exchange between Bitcoin and the Balboa within those wallets. But, you know, it's just brainstorming at this moment. But there's so much to do, and I'll be in Chiriqui next week, and I'll post you guys, you know, privately, you know, how I see those things, you know, actually developing. And see if we can actually do something with the Native Americans in Chiriqui.
No, we're gonna change this country and hopefully the region. And I know we have a lot of other people helping. Ibex Mercado, I mean, obviously Strike, Galloy. I mean, the amount of people. Osmo Wallet, my real good friend Piero Cohen. You know, it's a lot of people working on helping bring Bitcoin to our region. So I don't see any of them as competition, but more as allies and an ecosystem collaborator. So at the end, I mean, the talent and the level of passion that I'm seeing in this industry is so strong and so dedicated and passionate that I mean, I like I said, I'm a forever optimist. I believe that everything that's dystopian that's happening right now, it's for a reason. It's for the collective awakening that we're about to experience. So yeah, man, fuck it. Bitcoin forever.
This has been an amazing chat. Thank you guys for hopping on. I feel like we need to do it again. I feel like there's like 10 other topics, but just to like a couple things, the education component, the guy down in El Salvador, Meet Premier Bitcoin, doing an awesome like diploma program. They were just on Stefan Levera Pod and are kind of bringing that like to other communities. And so like, you know, in terms of, you know, one of the takeaways I'm seeing from what you guys are sitting in is like the need for speed to you know, compete in the free market, to compete again, you know, to get to people and teach Bitcoin only versus, you know, before there's scammers to, I like the idea of you like imported the bankers back in the day. It's like, you got to import the Bitcoiners, right? And so, which leads me to, first of all, a quote from Yehudi Castro Sierra, who you guys may be familiar with from Colombia. Yeah. Said like he was on a news, and I took this quote down. I'll just pop it up on screen while we're here. But I took this down I have this intro deck when I was learning about Bitcoin. I would like always just grab a quote and stick it somewhere. And he said, "The benefits for the people, the financial institutions need to reinvent themselves, or someone else may do it for them. We look for the best benefit of the people, right?" And like, what a pure statement about precisely. Like you're like, you cannot argue with that, right? And so maybe you need to import Bitcoiners. More Bitcoiners to you know, continue to build out the next financial system, which is the last point, which is adopting Bitcoin, you know, exists because when the El Salvador law was passed, the job was not done, it was only beginning. And so last year down in El Salvador was year one, this year is year two. down in El Salvador again in November. So come down, Miguel. I know you mentioned getting people together in Panama.
Are you coming? Are you coming to Panama the 5th?
I am not coming to Panama the 5th personally. We will have people there.
I know that. I've been working my ass off to make that happen.
Yeah, I'm stoked about it. With two young children, I only get a handful of trips per year.
I have a couple of years before I have kids.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm so excited about what you all are doing, I'm like super bullish, even more so than before. I'm Bitcoin in Panama. So like, thank you guys for this conversation. I'm sure people watching will enjoy as well.
Am I gonna see you in November?
Yes.
All right. My whole team is gonna be there. So
what's in November?
Great.
Adopting Bitcoin. Adopting Bitcoin is a lightning summit in El Salvador, November 15th to 17th.
Yeah. I'll probably go there as well.
Yeah, let's do it. Give a quick talk, Andrew. Push it.
There you go. You got Kamal on the controls here.
Kamal, push for me. Give me 5 minutes.
Thank you everybody for watching. Abelito, Miguel, this has been a pleasure. Stay tuned next time, and we'll see you again.
All right.